5 permits left that are available to sell, so we are currently sitting at 99% sold.
Great. That's good. I was looking at the map the other day, and let's see here. I can kind of show you guys the map and where we're showing some availability. So if we go to the on-street permits and the parking permit zone map, you'll see a few areas. We're looking for the dots in green. All the red and yellow have been sold. And I saw some yesterday. They might have disappeared already, JR.
No, they're there.
They're there. I should find them. Here's a few.
Yeah, and those are all three sold. They're just not updated yet.
Okay.
Pretty much everything that we have available is in Southview, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I saw some over here. Here's some over by Campbell and 8th.
And we probably have a couple on 10th Street, maybe.
Okay. Yeah, so in the areas geographically further from campus, essentially. Here we go. Here's 10th Street. Here's one. And so these are all in the lower end of the spectrum here, $150 a year. So great job to the team, JR, for getting all those sold. I know it takes a lot of work coordinating that. So 99%. Wonderful. Any questions on that? Okay, the next thing I wanted to bring up was an update on residential parking. And we conducted a report on July 18th. And the plan is to run this report once a year. And this is not only an update on the residential parking activity, but it lends itself to the Neighborhood Reinvestment Program. Because these are the percentages that we use to determine the participation percentage. So just going through this real quick, Armory Park, 14%. That's actually up 1% compared to last year. I'm sorry I don't have the comparisons up here, but overall, they're very similar to the numbers presented that you've been seeing this whole time. Blenman Elm, 33%. They actually had a little bit of an increase. El Presidio, 30%. And we're looking at, we're looking at paid permits. I referred to that wrong. So if I go back up to Blenman Elm, I knew that was high. We're looking at paid permits, 18%. So 112 sold out of 605 available. So this is the report that we would use for the participation percentage, and they're like I said, similar to the numbers last year. So Iron Horse 24%, Jefferson Park 8%, North University 6%, High Allen 17%, Rincon Heights 10%. Sam Hughes, 26%. And West University, 22%. So just wanted to give you a little peek at the latest report. And I'll take any questions on that. Okay. Let me do this. Let me just share my screen again. Sorry. Go back to the agenda. Regarding a parking service agent staffing recruitment update, we have 4 positions currently open for parking service agent ones. We are in the process of advertising for those positions. They are open. The positions were opened last week, and they close on September 20th. So we have 10 more days of those positions being available to apply for. We wanted to provide enough time to make sure folks can see the openings and can apply. So we wanted to at least straddle 2 weekends, because we heard from HR that weekends are sometimes a popular time for folks to look on websites and apply. We have our review of the applicants scheduled for October 7th, and we have interviews scheduled for October 14th and 15th. So looking to hire four parking service agent ones, and per the schedule I just mentioned, if there are opportunities to shed some days off and make the process a little quicker, we will do that as we go through the process. But this is our second time through the process with the city's new hiring process. And the HR team and our team have had practice going through this, so it should be a little smoother this time around, and hopefully we get some good candidates signed up. And if you know anybody who's interested in becoming a parking service agent, please refer them to the City of Tucson website to apply. And I'll take any questions on the parking service agent staffing.
I have a question. This is Richard. So why is it, do you think, people take the job and then quit?
JR, can I hand that over to you for your input?
It's, from my experience, a lot of it is the job is not what people think. People see this job on TV and think, you know, for the most part, from what we see, people think that they can come in, ride around in a golf cart, and get out parking citations. And when they get here, there's a lot of walking. The heat is brutal, and it's not what they think it is. The other side of it is we tend to get a lot of people that are retired, just looking for a gig to pass the time, and then they get here and realize it's a job. You know, it's the hours we work, the abuse that they go through. It's just not what they expected it to be. So most people come in, they get into it for a little bit, a few months, and see that it's the same every day, the beat down, the heat, and they just decide it's not what they thought it was. And then another factor is money. They're just not paid enough to go through the abuse that they go through daily.
Thank you. That's really helpful.
I'll add that during the process, we try to make the job conditions as clear as possible. The last we also use a temporary labor company that has been successful in the past. We have at least two employees that are hired now full time that we were introduced to through this program. And we have an interview, an informal interview with these folks, and we sit them down, and Joe Del Campo, our parking services supervisor, explains the conditions and tries to make it as clear as possible what this job entails. So we try to give as much heads up as possible and let them know what they're in for. We're going to have an increased focus on training, group setting training, bringing the team together, you know, whether that's, you know, going over codes or citations or just, you know, safety habits. We are focusing on training and safety and making sure that the agents have what they need to feel comfortable. So we'll definitely continue that and improve our training and our onboarding process as much as possible. Any other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
So we're on to 20-260. Yeah. Sidewalk area parking, or did I skip a part?
Yeah, number 5.
Oh, neighborhood reinvestment. Great. I can wait on 20-260.
All right. Thank you, Richard. I wanted to share a draft letter that I'm preparing. And my intent was to send this letter out yesterday. But in talking with Jesse Soto, we added a few items to this letter. And this is essentially the initial correspondence to each neighborhood post-approval of the program. So we're essentially just laying out the description of the program to each neighborhood. These will all be individualized letters to each neighborhood. So as you've seen before, we list the code that pertains to the reinvestment program. We talk about the funding sources and list all the funding sources. We provide the three main definitions for the essentially leading up to the earned funds, which is the revenue multiplied by the participation percentage. And there are our bullet points that were approved, highlighting the $30,000 per year cap on individual neighborhood spend and the $3,000 cap on the accumulation of earned funds and the $60,000 per year total project spend limit cap. So we list the program parameters, and we then provide the neighborhood their current fund balance. And we are about to finalize the fiscal year 24 fund balance numbers. We're just scrubbing it one more time to make sure they're correct. But all the numbers that the subcommittee and the commission have seen were the numbers through fiscal year 23, and that's what this number is for Armory Park. But Armory Park will have an additional $3,000 added to this total today to reflect their current fund balance through fiscal year 24. And we state that the Neighborhood Association will be notified annually of their updated fund balance in late July or early August. And of course, I'm available anytime to provide an update on their fund balance whenever requested. And Jeffrey, I can provide that to you much more often than once a year. So you can provide that information to the CCRC members. But I'll plan to send a letter once a year with this information. And then there's some instructions. It states to request to spend the earned funds and coordinate a project. They start with me with an email. And there's three items that we're requesting in that email, which is a main point of contact, a description of the project, including the intended purpose and exact location, and the approximate dollar value that they're requesting to expend. The approximate dollar value can vary because they may not have received quotes. You know, that's where Jesse can come in to help with that. But we're asking with an approximate spend projection. And then once I'm done with that email and get back to them and essentially approve the project, I then hand the contact over to Jesse Soto, who is the Neighborhood Traffic Management Program Coordinator. And then I state that the Park Tucson Commission will review this program in July or August of 25 and consider incorporating recommended changes based on financial, operational, or other activities and Neighborhood Association input. And just a link there for the program and my contact information. So this letter is planned to be sent out later today. And I'll take any comments, requests, or edits to this letter. All right, thank you. We will see how it goes with the applications. We are already hearing interest from a couple neighborhoods, and essentially, you know, this is a first come first serve type of project type of fund project. So I'll be coordinating that and ensuring that there is equity amongst the neighborhoods in terms of, you know, when it's their turn in line. We want to avoid having projects, neighborhoods conducting back-to-back projects in consecutive years to allow other neighborhoods to participate. And it's also based on the amount of funds spent per project. So, you know, we could have as little as two neighborhoods a year, or as many as five or six, depending on how much funds are spent. So I'll be coordinating that. And I'll be taking notes along the way to see if there's any improvements that can be incorporated. And I'll come back to the commission next summer to share. Take any questions.
Could you share that letter with us sometime soon? Thanks. Because I know I'm going to get asked questions about it.
Absolutely. I will share this with you today. Okay, thank you.
Okay, now it's 20-260.
All right, 20-260. So what I wanted to do first was just read the code. And this is just simply a review of the code, just to make sure everyone understands it. So section 20-260, stopping, standing, parking prohibited between the curb and sidewalk or in an unimproved pedestrian area impeding continuous pedestrian use. It shall be unlawful to stop, stand, or park a vehicle, whether posted or not, in that area between the curb and a sidewalk or in an unimproved pedestrian area such that it impedes continuous pedestrian use. Impeding continuous pedestrian use is determined when the stopping, standing, or parking of a vehicle leaves less than 4 foot wide unimproved pedestrian area. Provided, unless the area is posted with no parking signs, it shall be unlawful to stop, stand, or park a vehicle in an unimproved pedestrian area adjacent to roadways less than or equal to 26 feet wide. And I wanted to share, first of all, are there any questions on that, the language of the code? Okay, I wanted to bring up some photos of some examples of some violations of this code. This actually isn't the best example. Let me get a better example here. Here are some examples of vehicles parked between the curb and a sidewalk or an improved sidewalk. And, you know, there is some confusion between what a sidewalk is or pedestrian area. It doesn't matter if there's concrete or not. It can be dirt or of the such walking area, but you have to leave 4 feet in this area. And the Park Tucson agents enforce the 4 foot wide unimpeded pedestrian path requirement. So we do see vehicles parked in this area. You know, if there's 4 feet on either side of the vehicle, unimpeded access, we will not cite. But if there's not 4 feet of unimpeded access, we will cite. So just to summarize, vehicles can park up here between the curb and the sidewalk, but must leave 4 feet of continuous passage. So this does not look like this would be 4 feet. This would be a violation. And we know that currently you must leave 4 feet, and previously there was a push by residents in the participating residential neighborhoods to try to change the code to ban parking up on the right-of-way at all, regardless of the 4 foot clearance or not. So I know that was in talks a few years ago, and it did not result in the changing of the code. So currently, we're left with the code requiring 4 feet of walking margin in the right of way. And GR, if I can ask you, what is your experience with observations of folks, you know, violating this code or complaints about the code?
Yeah, I mean, mostly it's people, you know, in their neighborhoods wanting to walk around and having to walk in the street is the issue. We do get quite a bit of complaints. Pretty much West U, Rincon Heights, we get some complaints, but that's about it. Pre-COVID, we were in the process of trying to get the code changed. We had the code rewritten by the city attorney in hopes that it was going to get changed. And there just wasn't enough push from council to get the code changed. Pretty much what we were going to ask was if a neighborhood was eligible to be within our residential program, that there would be no parking whatsoever in the city right away between the curb and the property lines. Outside of that, you know, east side of town, west side of town, the 260 would pretty much stay the way it's written. It would just be within our residential parking programs. There would be no parking in the right of way. That was the hopes. That's what we tried to get done, but nothing, it didn't go anywhere. And that's what we need. I mean, in order to get the code changed, it's going to have to be mayor and council making that decision to change the code.
Thanks, JR. So, just wanted to make sure we reviewed the code and what it is, so we all understand the definition of the code and the examples that we see around town of the infractions. So that was it. Just wanted to share information about that today, but I'll take any guidance, questions, comments.
I have a comment. You couldn't even get it on a study session, which is why it never went anywhere. It takes two council members to get it on a study session. And I don't think that the director of transportation was ever willing to do anything about it at that point either. The 4-foot clearance thing I have a question actually. So there was a magistrate the person who does that makes the decisions when people contest things in court, that would throw out the 20-260 cases. Is that still happening, or has that been cleared up?
I don't know the answer to that. JR, do you have any
knowledge? They're judges. I've seen them throw stuff out that it's really weird. You know, he's a judge. I've seen him throw stuff out where we've had pictures providing proof, you know, handicap violations. We've shown pictures and provided proof, and they'll throw a citation out. And I've seen people show proof and have him uphold the citation. I mean, we get a lot, you know, we've had a lot within the last probably 4 or 5 years where the judges are throwing citations out and having the person come to our office and tell us that we shouldn't cite them because he's just going to throw them out. Unfortunately, it doesn't matter what he does. If the vehicle is still in violation, we're still going to enforce it. And if he wants to continue to throw them out, you know, that's what he does. But, you know, we've had it a lot where people are coming here and telling us that a judge is telling them we shouldn't be issuing those citations. And a lot of them are specifically 260s.
And JR, there is no magistrate anymore, right? It's we used to have a magistrate focused on parking, but now there's no longer one, right?
Right.
I think the other thing I find problematic is the 4 feet is ambiguous, even though you think you could measure it. But what if there's cactus on one side, you know?
It's not leaving it continuous at that point, so it's sightable.
Okay.
If there's a tree, a mailbox, a cactus, a rock, you know, in that right-of-way, it's not leaving a continuous passage. So at that point, it's sightable. It has to be a 4 feet of continuous, which means what we look for as an enforcement standpoint, what we look for is the person walking down the sidewalk has to be able to walk in a straight line around that vehicle. If there's anything impeding that, then at that point we will issue the citation.
Any other comments on this one?
Yeah, hi guys. So this is obviously going to get super pushed by West University, right? Because they have money to put sidewalks in, and so they need this code to be altered. Am I correct about that?
So the former director of transportation, Jim Glock, has made it his mission to pursue this.
Right.
He's only pursuing it in West University. I don't think that's particularly helpful.
I don't think so either.
That's what's going on.
Well, how do we jump on that and say you can't just do this just for West University because they got developer money to put in, you know, this is a safety issue. This is a complete streets issue. You know, this is a climate change issue, you know, all that stuff. Like, if they're going to go through the whole stuff to change it for Westview, like, I guess we all go talk to our council people again, like everybody in Park Tucson, I would assume. Because, I mean, everyone was for this change before. So, I mean, if we still feel that way, let's try and help make it happen. But how ridiculous. It can't just be one neighborhood. That doesn't make any sense. That's confusing to people, you know, particularly when there's so many surrounding neighborhoods that feed either events at the university or events downtown, Fourth Avenue area. You know what I mean? Like, we don't need to confuse our drivers any more than they already are, I guess, would be my argument. So that's my comment.
Yeah, I think the political will is still not there. I rep Ward 3. Kevin Dahl just says, oh, we walk in the streets. You know, it's not helpful.
And speaking for CCRC on the whole, yeah, they're not. There are certain neighborhoods, yes, but on a whole, CCRC is not behind this.
Okay. Well, that seems silly, but that's just me. Well, it's not just me, but. All right, thank you.
You know, it requires a cultural shift, and I think the cultural shift is being slow in coming. I mean, there's friction regarding the Sixth Avenue bike improvement between Speedway and 7th. Because people don't want to have to change how they park their cars. You know, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
Moving on to school parking neighborhood impacts update, which is another place where cars do ridiculous things and we can't do anything about it.
Thank you so much, guys. I appreciate it. And I wanted just to give an update on two schools that we focused on beside Tucson High School. And one is Mansfield Middle School. I did receive a couple complaints from neighborhoods around Mansfield talking about the traffic impacts and access to residences. And around Mansfield Middle School, we're just south of the University of Arizona here. Santa Rita Avenue, Fremont Avenue, those were complaints about the traffic and congestion on these streets, as well as 7th. And I spoke with the principal of Mansfield Middle School, Luke Van Schy, I think his name is, and I hooked him up with our traffic engineering team, and he's requested to make this alley here between Santa Rita and Mountain a one-way alley. It's currently not one-way, and the principal has a plan to use the alley to help direct traffic in and out of the pickup zone. Currently, they are using the parking lot as a pickup zone. They did express safety concerns there. They're wanting to make this a east to west one way so that the car door, the passenger side door, is closer to the student as they walk out, and then to make an exit out of the neighborhood to 6th Street. So this is one project that hopefully we'll see come to fruition, and hopefully it'll be worthwhile to do that. So I've updated the residents about that communication. I've also encouraged the residents to attend public meetings at Mansfield Middle School. And I also encouraged the principal, and he was well aware of it, to attend the CCRC meetings as well. And just staying on top of this, and I'm going to track that to see if that project is executed and if there's some relief to the neighbors there.
Yeah, he is a regular attendee of CCRC.
Oh, he's a regular?
Yep.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. That is great. And then the other high school is Rincon High School. We received a complaint from the neighborhood just south of Rincon High School. We're over here by Swan and Broadway. This neighborhood, I think it's called Sierra Estates, has reached out to me about unlawful parking activity, safety-related violations, including parking too close to stop signs, driveways, parking the wrong way on some of the side streets in this neighborhood. I spoke with the principal, who was aware of these complaints, and increased their communication to her students and parents about being a good neighbor, parking correctly. And we also followed this up with a visit by a parking service agent to monitor and to get some observations in this neighborhood around Rincon High School. But essentially every high school or middle school that I speak with, I am stating that Park Tucson can come around to issue warnings and citations. Please make your school population aware of that. And most of the time, the principal is very welcoming to that suggestion. Say bring them over, you know, site is necessary. So so that's the feedback I'm getting from principals. So just wanted to give you an update on a couple other schools aside from Tucson High that we've worked with and relieving some school traffic. I'll take any questions on that.
I don't have any questions. I do have a comment about Tucson High. If there's any continued conversation with them, on the weekends they rent out their field to like peewee football. That's a new thing that started maybe just before the pandemic. But they don't open both of their parking lots, so you know, I can't park at my home on Saturdays now either. The streets are full by like 8 in the morning. So if they could at least open both of their parking lots, that would be helpful.
I will pass that on, Jill.
Thanks.
Open both parking lots on Saturdays for Pee Wee football. Got it.
And I just have to iterate that there just can't continue to be no solution to this problem. I mean, every single afternoon during pickup, for 2.5 to 3 hours, 8th Street is lined with cars. I mean, you know, there's a break around 2, but people come and they put up their sunshades. They're sleeping in their car for an hour. Cars are running. You know, it's just, they should just close the street to that kind of traffic at this point. Or I can try and fight for that. But there's just no, I haven't seen any enforcement. Like, not Park Tucson, but even cops, you know, there's still the racing, all the stuff. It's just the same. Are you, and can Park Tucson give tickets to people when they're in their car?
Yes.
So if somebody parked with their car running in a permitted parking space, they should get a ticket?
Yeah, if you can chime in there. We can do that. We have done that, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just straight give a ticket. We're going to do an education process first. Agents are able to see if a vehicle's been warned for something once already. So pretty much for the first time that we would go out there, if there was a person in the car, we would educate them and make them move. If we came back a second or third time and they were still there, at that point we would probably issue a citation. But just because we're not going to straight start off with a ticket, we're going to do an education process first.
Okay. It's the same people, so that once there's enough agents, that would probably be helpful. I mean, it's just like not even healthy living in a parking lot with cars running that many hours a week. Thank you.
Thank you, Jill. And we will continue the conversation. We have the list of items that were suggested, and we will follow up with Tucson High to see if there's any momentum on their side. Regarding maybe the additional pedestrian gate by 8th and 3rd, potentially opening a vehicle gate and pushing for the use of their field, you know, as a pickup area. But we will definitely continue the conversation.
Thank you.
Any other comments on this topic? Moving on to future agenda items. Does anybody have anything they want to get on the agenda for next month?
I can't really think of anything.
The only thing I would, this is Jim, the only thing I would say is if we have a strong feeling about continuing to talk about Tucson High or the parking between the curb and sidewalk, maybe we just have that as standing agenda items.
I think so. I mean, I think those are things that have to be addressed or just accept that they're not going to change.
Right. Remind when people, the park is on a legislative body, and that is the issue. We don't make laws, we just suggest them. That's why 2060 doesn't move, 20-260 doesn't move forward, because no one has the will to, no one wants to have people call them up and yell at them.
But I know we, a couple of years ago, Richard, and we had like our committee made a recommendation to the Greater Park Tucson Commission on that particular ordinance, and then it kind of stalled out. But maybe we need to formalize it again, and I don't know, see if it gains any traction, and then make a decision. But it seems like if we do want to do something. In either one of those cases, maybe having a formal recommendation that we take to the larger commission.
That'd be fun because it passed unanimously last time. It'd be interesting to see if anything changed or if there's still unanimous support for it. So, people are sustaining.
The support is still there. I imagine the support is still there. It's just, once again, once it leaves us and goes to mayor and council, it hits a brick wall and Thomas and Donovan are both going to be told, go back and canvass the neighborhoods and get this sorted out.
Okay, so we'll talk about it next month.
Got it. I will keep it on the agenda, both those items. And go ahead.
I was just going to add one last thing is maybe, you know, I didn't do any of this last time and I can. So maybe we all just go meet with these neighborhoods, the ones that are in the program, if that's what we're still targeting for that particular ordinance change, and just talk to them as a group, like, hey, we all think, and here's what we're seeing and hearing. And maybe that has a slightly stronger push. I don't know. Just an idea.
That would be an interesting thing to do. I'm leery of doing it because I went to a virtual meeting with Feldman's because Donovan couldn't make it, and I got ambushed by Steve Kozacik, and it was not pleasant.
I remember you saying that. Yeah, that's unfortunate. Yeah, well, I'm happy to help wherever I can, so I'll just leave it at that.
As a group, I think I feel less singled out, so that would be nice.
So, Jim, you're part of CCRC. You're welcome to spearhead this there.
Yeah, I think I'll talk to Julie about it and just see, you know, like from her perspective. I have a weird role, right, on the commission because I run all the votes, for example, through the university administration because I don't want to just assume that my vote on behalf of the university is the one that the university would make.
Right.
So, but I will. I'll run it by Julie and just make sure that she's kind of my liaison, I guess.
Well, I guess with that, I'll say it's time for adjournment.
All right. Have a good day, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye. Have a nice day.
Take care.
Thanks. Bye.
Thank you.